Well, hey everybody, this is Patrick Milliken, and I'm here talking with my good friend Ace Atkins about his brand new Quinn Coulson novel, The Heathens, which is the 11th book in the series. And Ace, you've really taken us on a journey through these 11 books so far. Can you give us just kind of a basic rundown of what we can expect in this new one?
Well, I think the important thing that people need to know about this book is it's almost kind of a, I don't want to say a reboot for the series, but there were some very long story arcs that were going on in the earlier novels that kind of came to head in the last novel, The Revelators. And the house that I had constructed in those earlier books, I really wanted to destroy it. I wanted the walls of Jericho to come tumbling down and for there to be little that was left standing besides Quinn and his family and some of the characters that are that inhabit Tippahaw County. So this is the first book that is not linked to a larger picture. The Revelators was a culmination of several books with a character named Fanny Hathcock, who was a truck stop madam that was dealing in illegal activities, and it was about her, her work that she was doing, and really how that stuff, eventually it was the end story for Fanny Hathcock, and this is really about new beginnings. And it's the first time I think, Patrick, that I've done a book that it's really was meant to be constructed as a standalone, and it's meant to be read completely apart from the series. I don't think that you need to read the previous 10 books to get into the Heathens.
That's really interesting. Yeah. And this book, there are for people who have read all of your books, some of the gang appears. It's not like everybody's gone away. Lily Virgil appears in this book in a way, and she ends up, of course, she's now working as a US Marshal and is sort of cobbled together her own kind of domestic world, which is really cool, with her adopted daughter. And and adopted daughter, right?
Yep, that's right. And I wanted to show more with Lily. I mean, Lily is a character that I think readers really enjoy. It's somebody that I enjoy to write. I know women who are like Lily that work in law enforcement. I know a woman here in town in Oxford, Mississippi, that works that she's a U.S. Marshal. So she's very true and authentic to me. And so I wanted to show more about her daily life. And I think in some kind of ways, I wouldn't mind. I mean, it's certainly in my mind about doing a book certain just about Lily. There's some way down the road that I'd have a book that, without Quinn Coulson, we could just go into, learning more about the underworld and the criminal activity up in Memphis through Lily's eyes. And that would be fun for me. But it's really a new beginning. And, I wanted this to be something not connected to the larger, empire, but something that is a new start to really show, Quinn at work as a sheriff in this rural county.
Right. It's interesting. At the heart of this book, at least the way I read it, is quite a tragic story, really, about, and again, I don't want to give any spoilers away, but it's about a woman who has just not been given a chance or has been kind of tossed aside by fate and circumstances.
Sure.
Gina, the character Gina. Can you talk a little bit about her and sort of the impetus
And
for?
her, absolutely. And so many stories are either that I've written about are either things that have actually happened that are based on true stories or things that I covered as a newspaper reporter when I worked in Florida. And The Heathens is based on a story that I covered when I was in Florida. A story about a young woman that was accused and ultimately charged of killing her own mother. She was only 14, a woman named Valesa Robinson. And Valesa's case was national news. This was a big deal. She and two friends were actually suspects in this murder. They ended up going on this cross-country trip trying to get to, they're trying to get to Arizona to try to elude police. And anyway, the story was true. She did assist in killing her own mother. But there was always that time after it happened that people were wondering, could there be something else? Was there more to this story? Were there other suspects? What was happening? And so the genesis of the Heathens was all about what if these people had been innocent? Now, the story or the character of Gina Bird is not like the victim in the true story. Bless's mother was a local real estate agent. Someone had, had her life together. She was in a relationship with somebody. But Gina Bird is the character of Gina is really a woman who's been really, like you said, put through the ringer, has had dependency issues. She had a child as a teenager. She's had horrible relationships with men. She's going from job to job. She's on the wagon, off the wagon. She's just trying to make ends meet. And so when she's found dead, you know, the attention falls on a couple of different people, but certainly goes to her very tumultuous relationship with this 16-year-old daughter that she has, who's TJ.
Right. And TJ has a boyfriend, African-American kid, who's basically a good kid, young man.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about this stuff, because it really is almost the opposite of the true case. You know, in the true story that was the genesis of this, her boyfriend was not a good guy. In fact, his nickname was Rattlesnake. They called him Rattlesnake Davis. And he was 19 years old and really was a bad seed and was the one who, you know, with assistance committed this murder. But Ladarius McCade is a very likable guy. And he's a good kid. And he's kind of unfairly painted by the media and by people in town as kind of being an outlaw. He's a good kid. He's a teenager. He kind of gets into trouble. He occasionally steals a car or two, but he's overall a good guy. And so, you know, TJ is the one that kind of facilitates him going on a run with them, along with their friend, a young girl named Holly Harkins. And then, of course, TJ's 9-year-old brother, John Wesley, who comes along for the ride. It's really kind of a road trip
movie.
You know, I was really inspired by a lot. You know, I wanted to do it. You know, I wanted to get out of Tippahaw County. I wanted to change the rules. I wanted to do something very different. So it came about just the idea of this cross-country trip that these kids are taking, being hunted at the same time by this U.S. Marshal.
And they end up meeting up. They're squatting in this, they come across this kind of a mansion, wealthy man's, who, again, I don't want to give too many spoilers away,
sure,
but
there are some
of these kind of like minor characters who, like this, the patriarch of this family, what's his name? Good Blood?
Blood Good. Chastity's father. He's an owner of he brags that, you know, I think he says it's the first or second most successful car dealership in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And so he's got kind of a mansion compound on this lake outside Hot Springs. You know, this doesn't give too much away, because it's very early on in the book, kids stumble upon this mansion sitting, you know, on this lake, and they find it's a pretty good place to hole up for a while. And it's not a bad place until the guy's daughter comes and stumbles in upon the crew having probably the time of their life.
Yeah. And this character Chastity is a real piece of work, and she devises this scheme. The only reason I bring it up is because it sort of brings this series into today's era in some ways, and what it talks about. Yeah. Chastity, you know, she may have borderline personality or something like that.
Yeah. She's a nut.
She's a nut. And she convinces TJ and Ladarius and their crew, who, by the way, are all over the news now as being fugitives, this sort of on the run. And she devises this scheme whereby TJ is going to appear on social media. So social media plays a role in TikTok and all these modern things of getting TJ's story out. I thought that was it.
Well, I think you can't do, you know, with today, you can't do anything big like this. You know, when you have a TV station in the palm of your hands. And, you know, not only was this book very much inspired by the true life story of Valesa Robinson and what she went through, and very loosely, I say very loosely inspired, but I also, as you know, Patrick, as we've talked in the past, is how much I love old movies. And I love movies that particularly from the 1980s. And I was a big fan of this film called The Legend of Billie Jean with Helen Slater. I don't know if you remember this film.
Oh, yeah.
It was a huge movie back in 1985. I saw it when I was teenager, and I just absolutely loved it. And I thought, you know, kind of combine the true events with, you know, being inspired by that film. But then I thought so many things, both in the real life case and in the Legend of Billie Jean, could work so differently in the days of social media, when you have a way of getting your message out, and they start this hashtag of Free Bird, and then people are starting to sell t-shirts with TJ Bird's face on it. And she becomes a very instant media celebrity, and people want to see her innocent. They believe she's an innocent running from the law. And we don't go too far into, you know, whether she is or is not, but it's really about her kind of starting a movement, you know, for a girl that is from a place that's very much like surrounding counties where I live here in Mississippi. It's about, you know, exploring a larger world. It's about her reaching a, you know, whole group of people that she never has before, and finding, you know, a fan base or assistance from all over the place.
you introduce, I don't think these guys have appeared in the previous book, this father and son, these roofer guys, that diminutive in stature, who could have, at least the way I read them, they could have come right out of a Flannery O'Connor novel or a Carson McCullers novel.
Well, I took one of them's name is Dusty and his dad's name is Flem. And of course, Flem comes from, you know, Flem Snopes from Faulkner, from the Hamlet. But I thought about these guys and I know guys like this. I know guys like Dusty and Flem, and I know guys that are, some of them are salt of the earth and some of them, you know, are not. And Dusty and Flem are guys that take on any job. And when I say any job, you know, do anything for money. They get mixed up in this whole, there's some of the characters I really like writing. I know these guys very well. I know people like them. I know how they think. I know the lifestyle that they lead. Yeah, they add a whole wrinkle into the whole story as far as finding out really what happened to Gina Bird.
Can you talk a little bit about this semi-protagonist TJ Bird? Because I thought she was a really, really terrific character. There's elements of True Grit here somewhere. I thought of Winter's Bone a little bit.
I think she's that's what you need to know about her. And you see a lot of kids in rural areas that they can't count on their parents and they can't count on the traditional way of getting by, and they have to get tough very quickly. And not only, you know, TJ is only 15 years old, and not only does she have to, you know, take care of herself and get herself just the most basic things of shelter and clothing and doing, you know, just living, she now is really responsible for taking care of her 9-year-old brother too. And so she has to look after her younger brother, John Wesley. She has to make sure that he gets everything that she needs. And so she's, you know, from the age of being a kid, essentially, she's now really a full-time parent. Her mother, as we talked about earlier, has a mess of issues and is not there for them, you know, maybe intermittently, but not on a whole. And so TJ's a strong person, you know, and she's had to really take on a great amount of responsibility. So when something along comes, you know, a pariah in her community and is forced to run because people are accusing her of things, I think she's the kind of character that's ready to take on that challenge.
It's interesting because as dysfunctional and messed up as her family life is, you know, she has a lot of love in a twisted way, you know, for her mom. At least that came through to me, especially towards the end of the book.
I think that she has kind of I think what I found out with her, and again, this is from kids that I've seen in a similar situation, is I think she has kind of a grudging empathy for her mother. She has an outright distaste for everything her mother represents and her mother's weaknesses. But I think that she does have, towards the end of the story and through what she goes through, especially after her mother is killed, coming to terms with this, she understands and has some empathy for her plight, you know, because her mother was about her age when she had her as a child.
There's a great line where she says, Mama sure used to be beautiful before everyone used her up.
Yeah.
And there was also a great quote, and I won't dig too far much further into the book, where TJ, I thought it was just kind of a central quote for me in the book, where she says, you know, sometimes you get looked down on so much, you just start acting like what's expected of you. Might as well be an outlaw. It's what folks want to see.
Yeah.
But that was a real key, at least for understanding.
I think she just finally said, you know, I think TJ, I based some of these, her character, I was very fortunate. I've got a good friend of mine here, it's deputy sheriff. And for a while he was a school resource officer. And then he was back out on patrol. He's a friend of mine named Dave Cullison, and Dave would, you know, I'd go riding with him and he would talk about some of the kids that he was trying to help. And they were, you know, we're very fortunate kids that have loving parents or in good households, that have enough to eat every night, are very, very fortunate. And you get, you know, a mile down the street, a half mile down the street, and you see how the conditions people are living in here in your own community. This is not in another country. This is how we're living. You know, it's either, you know, it's an effort of survival. And so hearing these stories upon stories of several different kids having to live this way, I think a lot of that formed TJ's character. I spent a great, as you know, Patrick, I spent a decent amount of time doing reporting and collecting a lot of stories before I began to write, because I don't like the idea of fiction just being made up. I think that, you know, good fiction, good storytelling has to have a lot of truth in it. It's got to be something that's coming from an authentic experience, at least to start your story. And there's a lot of kids, a lot of young women around here. There was a young woman last year, I remember when I was writing this, I thought, geez, this is another TJ Bird. She was arrested doing smash and grabs on cars, just, you know, stealing what was ever in the cars, you know, and she was only 15 years old and, you know, she's got a mugshot. But when the more you learned about her and you learned about her home situation, you knew you had some sympathy for her, because you knew that she was just trying to get by. She was just trying to feed herself. She was trying to, you know, take care of things.
And part of the way that she connects with her lost father is through this 80s hair metal.
Oh yeah.
This has a very specific soundtrack to it.
Yeah. I kind of, a lot of, you know, he was a character who was, you know, had died quite some time ago. In fact, her father had died before Quinn Colson even came back to Tippahaw County in the Ranger. So in fact, this all is tied in with a relationship that he had with the former sheriff, who's Quinn's uncle. But right. I knew a guy like it. His name is Jerry Jeff Valentine. And I know guys like this. I went to high school with guys like this, and you probably did too, Patrick. And, you know, they probably drove a Monte Carlo SS and, you know, listened to, you know, Poison and Guns N' Roses. And they were kind of outlaw heroes in their own mind. And he, you know, it wasn't just that he loved the music. I think he lived by that rock and roll kind of code. And so TJ, with as much distaste as she has for her mother and as much complicated relationship she has with her mother, he was a guy that she barely knew, and she really idolizes him. And so by reconnecting to this music that he loved that's stuck in this time capsule, she builds a larger than life persona for a guy that really had a lot of problems. In fact, I have to tell you, again, you know, I don't go too far for my fiction. I had an uncle very much like this guy, and ended up flipping his car and, you know, leading a very short, very tumultuous life. You know, I thought a lot about him when I was writing this book, you know, being kind of stuck in that era and never really growing up. But there's something about him that's very cool to TJ, and listening to the music of the period is something she really likes.
Now, what's going on personally in Quinn's world? We do get some glimpses of his home life. It's pretty solid.
Well, I think that's the fun thing from writing these books. This is number 11. I the idea of having things change, grow, people getting older, businesses opening up, businesses closing, people going to jail, people dying, people, you know, and creating a world. I mean, it's not something wholly, my idea, you know, something very much inspired of where I live here in Faulkner's world, of having a county that I can play with as my own kind of sandbox and have these events and grow things. It's a hell of a lot of fun. It really is. He, you know, came to town after 10 years in the Army, comes back to help clean up the same kind of things that he had seen overseas as far as corruption and religious fundamentalism and drug running and that kind of thing. And so that's been a big part of the story. But at some point, a couple books ago, he got married. He has a stepson who is about 9 years old, named Brandon, and now he has a daughter. And so you get to see this kind of thing. I also really enjoy the books of C.J. Box too. I think that's what's kind of fun about reading Chuck's books as well, is you get to see his family with Joe Pickett, his daughters grow up. You get to see that world, you know, as far as the things change. And I think what's interesting to me about me doing that, I think a lot of authors have kind of characters who are stuck in time. I mean, I write a series continuing on the work of Robert B. Parker with Spencer, and Spencer doesn't get any older. Things don't change. People don't want things to change. He stays perpetually about 55, 56 years old. That's just how things go. With adding on new stories, new details, coming back to this world, it's great to come back to these characters and see how their lives have changed a great deal.
And I know you've always had kind of a, or at least it comes out in the book as sort of a love-hate relationship with what's going on at the South at any particular time.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, there are a lot of different strains that have come to the forefront in these last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you'll see that in the books. I mean, you know, I think if anyone who is writing about that time, you know, particular place in a particular time period, I'm going back and I'm reading Robert Parker's book set in the 70s, and you see things that were happening there with politics and race relations and changing of old Boston into new Boston. And you really just, it's a time capsule. It's a great document. It's not just crime fiction entertainment. It's social commentary on what was happening in the period. And I think that intentionally or unintentionally, when you go back and read the last five books of Quinn Colson, is you're seeing absolutely the rise of Trumpism and far right-wing ideologies and how that is really corroding the South. I love the South and I love Southern people. And there's so many people that would give you, you know, the shirt off their back. James Lee Burke wrote about people in Louisiana. They said they would do anything in the world for you, but they'd also burn up the U.S. Constitution in a second. And so I think that's where we're headed. I see a lot of things that I wrote about 10 years ago as being kind of past issues dealing with race relations, with poverty, with equality, things that I really thought as a teenager growing up in Alabama had been decided, but we're really thrust back in olden times. Things are kind of moving in reverse. And it's been a rich area to talk about, particularly these last 5 years. It's like, there's certainly a new fight going on for the new South. And I'd like to think of Quinn Colson as being one of the good characters that are leading that charge.
It's a good time for a new beginning, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Perfect timing with this book. Well, Ace, it's always been a treat to talk with you. And
well, you too, Patrick. Thank you so much.
Love the new book, and hopefully we'll get to be doing this in person again sometime soon.
Absolutely. And the book will be out on July 13th from Putnam at fine bookstores everywhere. But if you want an autographed copy, go to the Poison Pen in Scottsdale. What is it? It's poisonpen.com, right?
That's right. Poisonpen.com.
And get your autographed copies.
We'll be doing one of these events with Ace and Chris Offutt coming
up. Yep, absolutely.
Fantastic writer.
Neighbors here in Lafayette County. So look forward to it. And Patrick, thanks again for doing this.
Absolutely.